Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to another Autocar podcast. I'm Richard Lane, Deputy Road Test Editor, and I'm joined by our esteemed motorsport editor, Damian Smith. Now, today we're lucky enough to have with us somebody who surely has one of the most exciting jobs on the planet, at least if you're into very fast and very noisy cars, which we absolutely are. His name's Andreas Roos, and he's recently appointed head of BMW M Motorsport. We're going to discuss BMW's long overdue return to top-tier sports car racing, the latest GT3 program, and the fascinating, complex world of homologation, which is where the road cars come in. But without further ado, welcome, Andreas, and thanks very much for joining us. And to get us started, just tell us where the petrolhead journey began for you.
Thank you, and also welcome from my side. I'm happy to join you in this podcast. So, yeah, where did I start? To be honest, I started already very early, like some kids. I started with go-karting and then was very interested in motorsport. And I was lucky. A friend of my dad was already doing some motorsport privately. And then I was there joining the races and helping cleaning the car and the tires. And then at one stage, I thought maybe this should be my profession at the end, and I was getting more and more into it and being at the racetracks. And then I started mechanical engineering and said, okay, when I'm want to be a race engineer, I have to work in motorsport and do my mechanical engineering. I was lucky then already during my time of my studies, I started to work already in the professional motorsport. I started in DTM already, I think in 2000 or 2001 at Team Rosberg at this time. And then from there on, I went step to step, from first, let's say, cleaning cars and washing tires to helping out as a mechanic, data engineer, race engineer, technical director, and all of these things. So made my way up from, let's say, went to all steps in the motorsport, and was then very happy at one stage to also be involved in the LMP1 times, in the good old times in the WEC Championship from 2012 until 2016 with these prototype cars. And then the opportunity came up to join BMW M Motorsport. And so since February this year, I'm head of the BMW M Motorsport and very, very happy to have this chance and to work with a fascinating brand like BMW in the motorsport, which has a very great history. So very pleased about it.
So do you think it's possible, Andreas, to be a top dog of a motorsport operation like BMW M if you haven't gone through the system, so to speak, and come in at the bottom and have that real breadth of experience? Or is that quite unusual? Are you unusual in that respect?
I would not say that I'm unusual, because when you also look at other brands which are in motorsport or other big teams or where you have leaders, they often went through, let's say, the whole journey in motorsport. And at the end, it really helps you, because you understand basically the motorsport from the bottom to the top, and you have a good understanding for all the guys involved, for all the people at the racetrack, but also in the development. So I think it just makes my life easier to understand where the problems are and what you have to look for and how you can improve the whole situation.
Andreas, your grounding in LMP1 is obviously going to be of use to you in the next big challenge facing BMW M with the exciting LMDH program that's coming up. We're all excited by this new era of sports car racing. So many manufacturers coming in, BMW one of them. Could you tell us a little bit about why BMW decided at this time to come into sports car racing again at the highest level?
For sure, the LMDH program, or when the LMDH class was introduced, it was generally very interesting for a lot of manufacturers and also for BMW and Motorsport. Because we know the old LMP1 times, where quite high budgets were needed and there was a big fight between big OEMs to really have the fastest prototype car. But now the regulation really changed, and you can have, let's say, for a decent amount of budget, you can really be back in the World Endurance Championship and also in 24 Hours of Le Mans. And for sure, this, let's say, cost-efficient regulation, but also combined with a hybrid technology, which is now, especially in the transformation where we are in the road car sector, with going from combustion engine via hybrid cars into the fully electric, this is basically perfect for us, also BMW, in this transformation to support, let's say, our road cars, also on the motorsport side. So this is for us a perfect fit to be at the end in the biggest championships like IMSA and WEC, to be back in these championships with the prototype and be really on two big platforms where we can showcase what BMW is able to do, and this just helps us to support our road cars, and this is what we are aiming for.
It's a great opportunity for everyone here with this rule book for the first time in years, bringing America and Europe and together on the same platform. But obviously there's complications here. We were talking about this before we started recording. Two parallel rule books with the hypercars and this LMDH class. Could you just explain a little bit about the differences between the two and why BMW chose the LMDH route?
First of all, why BMW has chosen the LMDH route? For sure, it's, as I said, it's a very cost-efficient regulation, but also very interesting for BMW is the North American market, and especially the IMSA Championship, because BMW is selling nearly 50%, or BMW M is nearly selling 50% of the models to the North American market. So to be part in the IMSA was for sure from the beginning one important topic, and for sure the IMSA is at the moment also very focused on the LMDH regulation. But as I said, it's very cost efficient, and with one car and with this development, also with the spec parts, you can be really part in both championships. With the LMH cars, which is the second class in the hypercars next to the LMDH cars, for sure you have more freedom on the development side. For us, it was more important, let's say, to have really a regulation which is cost efficient, still hybrid, and be competitive in the highest classes. For sure, it will be a challenge, let's say, to balance out at the end these two different classes of cars, or not classes, these two different concepts of race cars. But there are already, let's say, a lot of working groups and a lot of clever people, let's say, from all sides, from the manufacturer side, from the IMSA side, from the WEC side, ACO, FIA, all involved to really get this aligned. And I think we are really on a very good way to see at the end fantastic races, and that everybody is able to win these races.
So Andreas, just tell us a little bit more about this LMDH prototype. you're building. You obviously made the decision to enter an LMDH car and join the program quite late. Firstly, what still needs to happen between now and the debut in Daytona in January? And as I say, just tell us a little bit more about this car, because it looks absolutely monstrous in the pictures, and I think the official livery is coming out later this month, and I think we're all very excited to see that.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much that you all liked our car. I think, to be honest, their BMW M and also our design guys did really a fantastic job to really see that this is a BMW. I think it's very clear when you see the car on track or when you see the car on pictures that it's really a BMW. It is a very unique BMW face. So there we are very happy. And generally, they're often nice cars, are hopefully often good and quick cars. So we are hoping that this will be also with our car, that we not only have a car which looks good, which also be quick. We have chosen our partner with Dallara to develop the car together with Dallara. And we are very happy that with the work we do together with Dallara. And then for sure on our side is the design work and the aerodynamics, but also the drivetrain with our V8 4-liter twin turbo engine, which we have chosen. So I think the combination in general is very promising. At the moment, you saw already the car did already the first tests and is now basically in the US, and we start now all the testing in the US. We have a very, very tight time schedule until the first race in Daytona, because we count the days. I think from today it's 135 days, because we count every day. It's very challenging, I would say. The development was already challenging. As you said, we started, or the decision was taken quite late for BMW to join. But as I said, with a partner, with Dallara, they do really a fantastic job there. And our guys also are fully, fully motivated and work flat out to make it happen and to get the car on the road. So a big, big milestone was already having the rollout, that the car is running the first time on track. We had already tests here in Europe. Now, as I said, we continue in the US and we'll stay also in the US with the car to just make sure that we are best prepared for the IMSA Championship.
You have some continuity, at least, with this new car because of the partner team, Rahal Lanigan Racing, who you have a long association with BMW through the GT program. But this is such a championship to go into, with Daytona and Sebring and all these really tough American circuits, deeply competitive, great driver lineups. What are the expectations for that first year, do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Everybody wants to win races, and I think we are for sure there. We don't just want to compete. For sure, we are there to win races. So at the end, everybody wants to win, and especially the big ones. But when you have such a tight time schedule, and when you develop a car freshly and new, for sure you can't expect that you will be on the pole position or on the win the race directly in from the beginning. For sure, we hope for it, and for sure we hope that we will be competitive to fight for wins in the championship. And this must be clearly our goal. So at the end, we want to win races, win championships, and be there on top, and show that we at BMW M Motorsport can build very fast prototype race cars.
And while you're racing in 2023 in America, you're obviously then preparing for 2024. Big season coming into the World Endurance Championship, and of course that means a return to Le Mans. Now, I was at Le Mans in 99 when BMW last won, or the only time BMW won overall. Fantastic year with multiple manufacturers involved, and a huge kudos to BMW for that win all those years ago. Can you give us some idea about the process you're going to be going through over the next year of preparing for that campaign? And obviously Le Mans isn't the only race, but it is the focus, isn't it? It does tend to dominate.
For sure Le Mans is a big pinnacle event where everybody wants to be on the podium and have the overall victory. So we have now the chance, because we come exactly 25 years after the last victory, or the victory of BMW come there. So for sure the goal is to win exactly 25 years later. So maybe very ambitious, but no, for sure we also there in the WEC in Le Mans. I mean, I was in Le Mans several times. I'm lucky that we also had the chance, or we had to be part of some wins also there. So this is for sure a great thing. But especially Le Mans, you can't force to win there. It will happen at one stage, but you have to do and get everything best prepared as you can. It's a very tough race, especially when you have multiple manufacturers there and not only one or two. This will be for sure very tough. So for sure I have to say we are in a very good situation that we can focus now in 2023 on the racing side, let's say on the two cars we run in the IMSA Championship, and then can fully concentrate also in parallel on the development and the preparation for the WEC Championship. So for sure this will start at one stage to run in parallel, that we have the racing in the US and start the testing more in Europe for the WEC Championship. But also this will be quite demanding and will be a lot of work to be best prepared at the end for the WEC Championship and especially for Le Mans.
And you obviously got another great partner team in Europe with WRT, who are vastly experienced and have done very well in LMP2. What are they going to bring to the project, do you think?
For sure, WRT is a very well-known racing team. I mean, they had so many success in GT racing and endurance racing, but also, as you said, also now in latest in the prototype racing in the LMP2. I mean, they came in the first year and won the ELMS championship, the WEC championship, and had a victory in Le Mans. So this showcased already how competitive they can be right away, and they... this is why we also looked for sure at different possibilities and different teams and made a evaluation which could be our best choice as a partner. And then at the end we agreed together with WRT that we want to be part of this journey together to be back in the WEC and to be back in Le Mans. And I think WRT brings there also a lot of experience as a team into this project, which hopefully is at the end very fruitful, together with the knowledge, let's say, from BMW and Motorsport, together with the team, to have the best racing on track.
And I've got to bring up the elephant in the room in a way that Ricky and I were talking about before we came on air, that balance of performance is central to this whole new era. And without it, all these manufacturers wouldn't be coming back to Le Mans and to sports car racing. But it is difficult, isn't it, in terms of managing not only balancing between the two, the different LMDH cars, but also the two different rule books. There's an awful lot for the officials to get right here and to get wrong. What's your feelings on balance performance, and how confident are you that this is going to work?
I mean, we are very confident that it will work, because I think if we would not, or the other manufacturers also would not be confident, I think nobody really would have joined it. So at the end, for sure, the BOP is more or less the base of this whole concept and whole structure of LMDH, or not only LMDH, of hypercar racing. And this, for sure, is as I said, is a great effort we have to put in from all parties involved, from let's say from the guys writing the rule book up to the manufacturers and everybody. It will not be that easy, but as said, I think there are a lot of clever people involved, and playing with open cards always helps, and then we are for sure able to find a proper way how we can balance all these cars. I think in the purely the LMDH cars is quite straightforward, because the rule book is very narrow and the concept is for each manufacturer nearly the same. So this could be quite straightforward, and I think we will also manage to find this, let's say, convergence between the LMH and the LMDH cars, that we have one hypercar class which fits very well together and has the same performance, let's say, on track. But it's for sure a challenge, but a challenge we accept and everybody accepts, and where we are confident that we will succeed.
Andreas, so you say the LMDH rulebook is quite tight. I mean, are we going to see enough of the different characters of the different cars coming through during the course of a season? And in regard to that, where do you think the strengths are for your package with the car?
For sure, one of the main focuses when you do endurance racing is for sure reliability and drivability. That for sure, when you want to do a 24-hour race or a 12-hour race, and a lot of our races are endurance races, that you really have a car where the drivers feel comfortable and can easily do the lap times. It's also that the mechanics can easily work on the car. It has to be reliable. And I think this was also one of our main focus in the development phase, that we can develop a car there which has, let's say, everything what you need for endurance racing and for endurance car. And there, I think we are on a good way. And now the next endurance test will show if we did it in the right way, if we already have the car in the window that it can do a 24-hour race. But I think we are on the right way, and quite confident with that we will get it managed. But at the end, as said, the LMDH regulation is on one side, it's very tight, let's say, in terms of where you can move yourself in the performance. But on the other hand, it also leaves you a lot of freedom in terms of styling, how a car looks like. Because if you see also on the LMDH side how different the cars look, and this also is very unique and very interesting to really see that you can give your car a face and a unique styling, that not every car looks exactly the same.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Andreas, I was talking to one of your arrivals recently, and he was saying that there's, with this new era, there's kind of a responsibility for all the participants to kind of get into the same frame of mind. And, you know, obviously there's potential here for politics to become a part of a problem in this balance of performance, as we've seen in the past in GTE. What's your thoughts about that, about the spirit of this new era? Because that's kind of important, isn't it?
Yeah. What I felt from the beginning when I was involved in LMDH, and it started already last year when I was involved, I felt immediately a very good and unique spirit between all the involved parties. So we had a lot of meetings also in the run-up until now, especially about the topics, technical topics about BOP, convergence between LMH, LMDH for the hypercar class and things. And I always felt a very good spirit between all the manufacturers. And this, I think if we can keep this momentum, I think we are definitely on the right way. For sure, as always, as soon as the race starts, everybody is fighting for himself and everybody wants to win a race. And this is why we are here. To at the end win races and showcase that we can have the fastest car and the fastest package. For sure, you have to be careful in which way you level this, but there is also a lot of responsibility on yourself, on the manufacturer himself, to really stick to, let's say, a line where we want to go and what we want to achieve. And what we can really feel in this whole meetings and when you talk to the other manufacturers, that everybody is really interested and wants to get this hypercar thing running. They really, everybody is looking forward to just get it running, and then let's say see how it develops. But everybody feels that it's a great opportunity and a great chance to get it done and to make something big happen.
Yeah, it's a really exciting time, the build up to this this new era, and so much, as you say, so much opportunity here. I've got to ask the Formula One question. I'm sorry, I know it's always a pain to ask this one, but
no problem.
Some of the your German rivals, we've got one of them very well established, one of them coming in, one of them maybe not now. We'll see what happens with the other one. But what's BMW's take on Formula One at the moment? We've got the new regulations coming in for the engines in 2026. It yeah. looks like a good opportunity. We know how big Formula One is as a marketing platform. What's the view?
So for us at the moment, it's definitely not on the plan to go back to Formula One. I mean, BMW was already in Formula One in the past, but at the moment it's not on the radar. And also, especially what I said before, for us at the moment, showing our transformation, let's say, from combustion engines via high performance plug-in hybrids to electric world, let's say, of purely battery electric vehicles, there for us at the moment, from the timeline and what we can showcase, the hypercar class fits perfectly to us, and this is why we clearly committed to this and said this is where we want to go, and this is, let's say, this parallel line, what we do in motorsport and in on the road car, and this is why we decided to be on in LMDH racing, and as I said, it fits perfectly, and so at the moment Formula One is not on our radar.
Thank you for your patience on that one.
So no, Andreas, just moving away from the hypercars for a moment, I'd be really interested just to know a little bit more about how BMW M Motorsport manifests. How many are you in terms of staff? What's the split between engineers and logistical staff and so on? Where are you spending most of your time? Are you in Garching? Obviously, the race cars themselves are built in the same workshops that the M Division road cars are sort of being developed and tweaked. Can you just shed some light on the world of BMW M Motorsport?
Yeah, for sure we are in a lucky, let's say, situation that the motorsport department is also now again a part of the BMW M GmbH, where, let's say, very fascinating and emotional cars are built, which race cars is normally then really the top of it in terms of emotion. So we are really happy that we have this work together. And so, but this also leads us to a point we can't clearly say at the end how many people exactly work only for motorsport or only dedicated, as we are now one group and one big family in the M. So we share basically also our tasks and development topics. For sure, we have some engineers, mechanics, and people which are only really 100% dedicated only to motorsport and only do the motorsport things. But we have also so people who do a bit of both, and there we also then share, let's say, this development and also have this interaction between road cars and race cars, which is at the end very fruitful for both sides, and this helps a lot in the development process, and this is at the end what we also want from as a manufacturer, that not only there is an island where the motorsport sits, it's more about being a whole part of it, and there we have to say the motorsport fits perfectly into the M GmbH, because there we build the road legal race cars, and so as you also said, we build in the same workshop in Garching, we build the GT3 race cars, also the GT4 race cars will be built there. The LMDH cars, this we will build at the team or at Dallara. So as this is only a handful of cars at the end, it's a pure prototype. And also our motorsport division is not only sitting in Garching, me for example, and a lot of people from BMW Motorsport, we are sitting close to the development center in Munich, and so we have also there a good link. This just helps to use all the resources and everything what you have in a big company like BMW, and just helps you to get the best out of it.
This bit of both engineering that you talk about fascinates me, because that homologation handover has changed an awful lot in you know, the last 3 or 4 decades. So if you go back to the days of the E30 M3, really a pure homologation car, and now it's a lot more murky, and we don't know how much of the road car, say with the current M4, is informed by the race car and vice versa. So how has the homologation process changed over the last few decades as you see it?
Yeah, for sure. When you look back, especially at the E30 M3, which was at the end a Group A car, where you had strict regulations and had to be based really on a road car, and you had to build this amount of models and things like this. The cars were much closer, let's say, to a road car than some of our cars are now. When you look now at the LMDH car, I mean, as from the vision, how it looks like, it's a complete different car. It's not comparable to a road car. But on the other hand, for sure, you have also areas and topics on the electronic side, or for example, also now with the hybrid system and software and strategy, where you also will find again in our modern road cars, where there is now interaction. So now, depending on which area you go, it's a bit different. For example, when you look at our total, let's say, range of cars we build, when we start with the entry form with the M2 CS Racing, which is like a road car, but just with a roll cage, and where you can go directly on the track and have a lot of fun. And then you step up into the GT4 world, which is already, let's say, coming much more race car, but still, when you park the car next to a M4 competition, you will clearly see that where the base is from and what this car is. And then you move the next step up into GT3, where you see already, okay, there were done some more changes, let's say, to the road car, and it looks a bit more racy and wider and things like this. So, but you can still clearly see that it where the base is from the race car, and this is also very important for us for BMW to really also showcase what is possible with our road cars. And for sure, the whole homologation process now also changed a lot, the pure process itself. In the past, there was maybe, I don't know, a few amount of parts, motorsport specific. The rest was all, at the end, road car. And now there are a lot of race car specific parts in the car, but everything is also much more, let's say, controlled and checked by regulation. Just to make sure that you get everything aligned and that nobody has somewhere an advantage and that you get everything much closer. So I think the process, I don't know, maybe that the paperwork in the past were maybe 10 pages, how now it's 100 pages. So I don't know exactly, but it for sure the effort also increased a lot to make sure that everything is according to regulation and to keep the whole framework closer together to be really at the end have good championships with very different cars which are all competitive.
So what are the toughest things to homologate these days? Obviously, with the new M3, M4, you've got the S58 engine, which is essentially, but for some, you know, ancillaries, shared with the GT3 car. But what gives you the real headaches in terms of getting that stuff homologated?
At the end, there is not really any headaches, because this also is quite well developed together with the authorities, like, for example, the FIA or SAO or whatever, because there are now clear rules where you can really read line by line and know exactly what you have to do and how, at the end, the car or the engine or the suspension or the aerodynamic has to look like. So there is a very strict rule book, and for sure over the years all, let's say, these gray areas and loopholes were closed. So for sure the rule books are getting thicker and thicker, but it also makes it for yourself when you develop a car also it more straightforward because it's very well defined what you are able to do and what you are allowed to do. For sure, some things where you're not sure, you can always openly discuss with the authorities in which direction you have to go and what you can do. So also already in the development process, you're already aligning with the authorities just to be sure that you are going in the right direction. You don't today, you don't just build a car and then put it there and say, now this is my race car. So this is not how you do it now. So it's more, let's say, that you have a constant exchange, and this we also had on in the development of our LMBH car too. We had a constant exchange to see in which direction we go. It started already very, very early, already with the first design sketches, how the car could look like, and that you have there always get the feedback and go forwards and backwards, and then you are sure at the end when your product is ready that you are, let's say, in the window where you have to be.
So if you take the current GT3 field then, who are you looking at and quietly thinking, oh, God, I wish I had that sort of base model to work with? That, you know, your Porsches, 911, Lamborghini, Huracan. It's very cool to race with a mainstream coupe like the M4, but you must look at some of the other base models and think, that might have been a bit easier for us.
Yeah, but generally we love challenges. So this is why it's very nice. At the end, for sure, our base model is for sure not the same like a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a Porsche. For sure not. It's quite obvious to see. But for us, it's a very nice challenge, let's say, to bring our car on the same grid and on the same performance level of all the other cars. And if we are honest, let's say on the road car sector, when you look at the M4 competition, its direct rival is a 911 Porsche. And this there we are competing, let's say, on the road. And this is the same what we do in GT3 racing. And this is also there we want to showcase that our car is a competitive car. And I think at the moment with the new M4 GT3, we showcase already that the car is very competitive and can win races. So there was also put a lot of effort in the development. For sure, on some models, some things are easier. But on the other hand, maybe also our car is on some areas an advantage over the other cars. So I think it's a give and take. But for sure, it's for us nice to show that with a maybe a bit other car, you can also be very competitive.
Yeah, I absolutely take your point on that. It's very cool to see stuff like the M4 going wheel to wheel with far more exotic machinery at the Nürburgring, and so on. So, on that note, then, do you you've obviously got these two major programs at the moment? You've got GT3 and the hypercars. Do you think that actually the GT3 program is more important to BMW in a broader sense than the hypercar program, because obviously everything you do in motorsport has to feed into the business of selling M cars? And just to your point, I think that seeing M4 racing cars is something quite special in the field they're in, and they're more relatable to you know, the man and woman in the street who's actually buying the cars. So yeah, which program do you think has more of an impact on BMW in the broader sense?
At the end, I think all the programs we do. We also don't forget about our GT4 car, where at the end we developed now a new car, and we already can say that it's selling very well. So also there is a very big interest in having our GT4 car. But for sure, the GT3 car, GT4 car, there we have it's very road relevant, I would say, to how our race car and road car already look like, but also with the technology. But on the other hand, with a hypercar class, with our LMDH, for sure you are, let's say, running in the biggest championship in the USA. You run in the world championship in the WEC. So for sure, there also the platform is very unique, and you have a lot of reach, let's say, when you are running there. So I think at the end, both are very important, and it's a bit the same in that the higher the category is, the more important it gets in terms of reach and where the people talk about. So So at the end, but we clearly put the focus on both, more on the side, how our road cars are, to have the right direct connection road cars to race cars, like say like the GT4, GT3, but also the prototype. So there is on both is a big interest on our side. So this is both very important for us.
I think we're nearly out of time, Andreas, but I've got one last question just to put you on the spot a little bit here. You told us at the beginning, motor racing is your life. It's been your life all the way through. Can I ask you a personal question about this program? IMSA in America, the World Endurance Championship and Le Mans. Which one for you matters most?
I can tell you there are some big races which are very important, and it starts... When you just look at the calendar, it's Daytona, mm-hmm. it's Sebring, and it's Le Mans. And at the end, when you are a real racing enthusiast, I mean, these are the big races you want to win and where you want to compete. And so as there are two of them are in one championship, one is in the other championship, I have to be fan of both championships. No, I mean, I have to say both championships are really great. For sure, US racing is something different than let's say, the European or the WEC championship, but... It has both are very competitive. Both are different, but very competitive. And at the end, it's in both. It's a pleasure to compete there and to race there. Mm.
All right, Andreas, my last question as well. When you the future of motorsport is pretty uncertain at the moment. We've got manufacturers looking at hydrogen. There are various electric series and. You know, even with these LMDH cars like yours, we've got 4-liter V8 hybrids. When you look at something like an i4 coupe, what do you think? Is there a GT racing car in there somewhere that, you know, gets you excited from the position of BMW M Motorsport boss, or does it just leave you a little bit cold?
Maybe it's not the i4, but maybe in the future there will come something different. We never know. But for sure, the topic electric racing is also a very interesting and important topic also for us, because at the end, as I said, we are at the moment on the road car side, we are in a transformation to really also get the high performance cars into this electric world. And this is what we also do with our race cars at the end. As I said, now we are in a high performance plug-in hybrid or hybrid car, which we will also see on the road. And clearly our goal is to be also in electric racing in the future, to really be in parallel to our road cars. This is the transformation we are going, and there is also no secret about it, that also this is a topic we clearly look into it.
Great. All right, Andreas, thanks very much. Damo, thank you also. And
thank you very much.
Best of luck with all your upcoming programs.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.